Behind the Wheel with Chris Miller and Peter Hitchner.
Yes, welcome back to Behind the Wheel, broadcasting on stations right across the country and, of course, downloadable as a podcast. And I need to say it again, we've hit that milestone, 50,000 podcast downloads in the year 2015. And really, it's an absolute pleasure to, well, have your company if you have downloaded us as a podcast. And remember, feel free to leave us a little rating on iTunes. You can kind of leave comments, constructive criticism. You can get the boots in too if you like. We really don't mind. We've got thick skin, but you know, at the end of the day, the show's for you. We want to make it great, so make sure you keep us posted on what you want to hear about. And I know lots of people do want to hear about Mercedes-Benz because what a resurgence they've had in the last couple of years.
Yes, everywhere you look, there's a new Mercedes-Benz model, and people are buying them in droves. Certainly, it looks like that. If you get stuck in traffic anywhere, and don't we all, there are Mercedes everywhere.
And also, think of the Formula One team dominating the world championship.
Exactly.
You know, really, all over the world, Mercedes-Benz, you know, are the prominent car maker. And from Mercedes-Benz Australia, real pleasure to welcome to Behind the Wheel, David McCarthy. G'day, David.
G'day, guys. How are you? And congratulations on that milestone with your podcast. That's fantastic.
Thank you. David, you must be delighted at the, it looks to me anyway like a resurgence in the Mercedes brand with the freshness of this almost all-new model lineup you've got and a couple of models to come.
Well, in real estate, guys, I always say it's position, position, position. In the car industry, it's product, product, product. The GLE and the GLE Coupe, I'm biased, but it's fantastic product, particularly, you know, in a market in Australia that is booming. Lots of other markets in the world are not enjoying the same growth, and Mercedes-Benz this year in Australia will sell over 30,000 vehicles.
Wow.
And that is, you know, a significant achievement for us. But again, it's about product. You've got to have the product that people want to buy. And GLE Coupe, particularly, I think, is a really interesting product. And it crosses over between a pure SUV and a coupe. People are familiar with our CLS. And this is something that I'm pretty excited about because I know from the inquiry we've received that it is going to be a huge success for us.
David, is it like a CLS on steroids, or is it different, you know, different thinking, different design altogether?
Look, there's a lot of it is fed into that, Peter. Steroids, yeah, look, we could call it the steroids utility vehicle. Look, there's a bit of it. Design is really important. Ultimately, people, you know, buy a car, and design is a huge feature of that. How they perceive the vehicle, and certainly the silhouette of that vehicle is quite different. CLS has been a big success, you know, for us. It's a four-door coupe, and a lot of people say, well, how can a coupe be a four-door? Well, it is. The GLE coupe is the same. It delivers a little bit more individuality to people that want an SUV for all the reasons they want an SUV, but they want a different design. So CLS has had a big influence on that, but this is a very different vehicle.
Right, and tell us about the GLE itself, David.
Well, GLE succeeds the ML. This is, you know, an SUV, and remember, you remember back to the original Jurassic Park?
Yes, I was just about to say that. I saw the new one on the weekend and went, my God, there's another new Mercedes SUV being launched in a dinosaur movie.
Exactly. So, you know, back then it was ML, now it is GLE. It's a vehicle that pretty much invented that segment. Now, whilst there are been SUVs, and you can go back in history, there have been all sorts of interpretations of that. For us, you know, as a luxury and a prestige SUV, we were the first, and the GLE continues that. So it's a significant update of the ML, but with some new engines, with some new design features, and a very clear link between the GLE and the GLE Coupe.
I seem to remember that the ML, I think, might have been sourced from Alabama. I'm not sure if that was the case. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Yeah, which I think is a wonderful name. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Isn't it wonderful?
I know. You have visions of all sorts of things, don't you?
Yeah, it's wonderful. And a maker of, you wouldn't really necessarily expect it to be a maker of high-end luxury SUVs.
Look, wherever we produce cars in the world, and we produce them in Germany, we produce them in Brazil, you know, in the US, in South Africa, in all sorts of places, there's a standard that applies to the factory. So where it is made isn't as important as how it's made. Interestingly, the quality measure on vehicles coming out of Tuscaloosa is extremely high. You've got to remember that you know, this is an important industry in Alabama. You know, we're not the only European manufacturer that, that operates, manufactures in the US. A number of other German brands do as well.
Yep.
And whilst there might be some cost differences, at the end of the day, it's the quality, and interestingly, it's the commitment of the people there building these vehicles that they know are going around the world. So there's an element of pride for them.
And what are the challenges in general facing car makers at the moment, especially high-end car makers who, however, still have to have vehicles to appeal to all segments of the market? How do you do that?
Well, in Australia, in our model catalogue, going from A-class all the way up to S-class, so basically from the mid-30s, 30,000s, all the way up to over 500,000 and more, that we have over 100 models and variants in our catalogue in Australia. So that's where you meet the market. The challenge for us is, in a lot of cases, is supply. You know, we're a relatively small part of Mercedes-Benz worldwide, but it is a growing market, and it's a very competitive market. So the challenge is, what models do we bring, what engines, what trim? Deciding that, at the end of the day, we succeed or fail on whether or not the customer agrees with us, and they have. So, but it is a struggle for me in my role. All these different models and all these different variants, it's sometimes I forget how many we've got.
And of course, car making itself is such a complex business with so many factors going into the design and the delivery of a vehicle. As you said, it can be a bit of a struggle by the sound of things. What's your hero car? What's the car that sells most for Mercedes, and what's the one that you know, into the future looks like occupying most of the sales?
Look, I think currently in Australia for us, the C-Class is our biggest seller. It's actually the second biggest selling medium-sized car in Australia, regardless of price.
That's incredible. It really is. For a prestige mark, you know, and with the price point that it's at, I'm not saying that it's super expensive, but, you know, you're looking at a car that's in the mid-50s, aren't we?
Yeah, and, you know, this is a vehicle that is recognisably a Mercedes. It's, if you say the S-Class is the grandfather, and I don't mean that in terms of age, but in terms of it sits absolutely at the pinnacle of our range. The C-Class, in so many ways, is a mini S-Class. In terms of where it's priced, we've just announced our C63 AMG.
Oh, exciting car.
Its predecessor, the C36, was released 20 years ago, and it was priced at $154,900. The C63, which is almost twice the power, and dare I say it, more than twice the car, is $154,900. So the price over 20 years has not changed.
It's
when
not
you
changed.
Factor in inflation, cost of living, the car is effectively half the price.
Now, something, David, that I think has changed, that I've noticed anyway, anecdotally it seems anyway, that Mercedes buyers, especially the C-Class buyers, seem to be younger.
Yes, with the C-Class, but also the A-Class, you know, the CLA, the GLA, there's been a clear focus that we, you know, we do need to get younger buyers, and that's shown, you know, in terms of the technologies in the car, the interaction with the car. The average age of our buyers is coming down, so that they're probably younger than you and I, Peter.
How dare they?
I know.
What are they thinking? March them out of here, and I never want to see them again.
Exactly, but if we don't get younger buyers, and look, every company faces this challenge. You know, that you have to get younger buyers. The technology is helping to deliver that. But yes, the age is coming down. An interesting fact with our compact cars, the A-Class, the CLA, the GLA, that 75% of those buyers are new to the brand. So they're not existing Mercedes owners. And the age of those buyers is significantly less than our, let's say, our more traditional owner. But again, you know, that's how you grow. You can't, you know, just as in radio, you can't rely on the people that have always listened. You've got to get new listeners, and one way to do that, obviously, is podcasts and other things. So, it's I look at radio as new media. You know, it's not old media.
No, I agree with that, and it's perennial media.
Yeah, and you know, people will listen, you know, to this on a podcast. They'll listen to it on, you know, online in many, many ways. And with us, with our cars, you have to have a reach, and we are the only brand that has a reach from those mid-30s all the way up, actually, to the Mercedes-Maybach at $650,000.
Gosh.
Wow.
Every stop in between.
And are you finding, David, the traditional owners, are they still sticking with the brand, even though you're getting all these new ones, that they're still sticking around as well?
They are. And, you know, we wouldn't have that growth just on the basis of new customers. You know, the C-Class, you know, there are people that are now on their second or third or fourth C-Class. The same with S-Class. We have customers that, you know, there are two and three generations in a family that are Mercedes-Benz owners. So you've got to retain those existing customers, and it's always a challenge because as you change the product range, you can't forget those traditional owners. But they also have, you know, they have a particular view of our brand, and you've got to satisfy that, and that is, you know, when people think of luxury and prestige, they think of Mercedes-Benz.
They do, yeah.
So, but there are new buyers, new owners, that they may not have that, they have that perception, but they think of the brand differently. That's where something like AMG comes in terms of driving performance. It is a very different situation to a traditional owner. But those AMG owners, I can tell you, they're absolute train spotters.
Yes.
They know everything
absolutely
about the brand.
Am I right in suggesting that when it comes to AMG, Australia is one of the most successful markets for Mercedes-Benz with that performance brand?
In terms of, and I have to choose my words here carefully so it doesn't sound rude, in terms of penetration, we lead the world. In terms of ultimate numbers, no, there are other markets that are bigger. We'll probably finish this year with AMG being at least 10% of our volume. Now, that is very significant.
What would the figure be for, say, the States? Would it be somewhere sort of more like a 5% of the volume
Probably around 5. And remember, you know, that's more than 3,000 AMGs. There are car brands in this country that don't sell 3,000 units a year.
Exactly, yes.
So as a brand on its own, it could stand on its own, but it's an important component of what we do. So in terms of penetration, number one, in terms of customer retention, it is one of the highest in the world. And we also have the same situation in New Zealand. It's exactly the same there.
Look, David, it's been a great pleasure to have your company today. Before we let you go, one question I do want to ask is about the E-Class and when we're likely to see a replacement for that, because although it's still a very fine-looking motor vehicle, it seems to have been around for a little while now.
Yeah, 2016, that vehicle will get to Australia. I'm not sure which quarter it's going to be yet, but I've seen the car.
Yeah?
It's fantastic, and there are other versions of it coming, obviously a coupe and a cabriolet and an estate. That is a vehicle that is hugely important to us. Whilst that segment, that large car segment, is not showing overall growth, we're doing very well with it. It's an important car for us. We can't wait for it to get here, but it's 2016 for us. It'll probably show itself towards the end of the year.
Gotcha.
And technology-wise, that is, it's going to have some technology in it that is really significant.
Would that be maybe in the realms of sort of autonomous driving and autonomous parking and things like
yes.
that?
Yes. Look, one of the challenges there, guys, is in a technical sense, autonomous driving is very possible. We've demonstrated it, as have other brands. The challenge is the legal environment that, you know, our engineers won't put a fully autonomous car on the market until they're 100% sure, because you've got to cover every eventuality. But at the end of the day, even a fully autonomous car is going to have the ability for the driver to retain control.
Yes, to take over.
But again, you know, you want people buy a car because they enjoy driving it. But the ability to, all the time we spend in cars, for potentially to be able to be doing some other things to maximise our time is hugely important. But it is the legal, logistical challenges, you know, the road rules.
Yes,
of course.
And the many jurisdictions, because it has to go on sale around the world, obviously, to make it worthwhile.
Exactly. The technology will deliver it. It's the legal framework, and also, dare I say, people's acceptance that you can get in a car and it will take you to a from point A to point B, potentially without any interaction from you, that's a big step.
It is. You have to suspend doubt, don't you, when you put yourself into that situation. What about electric vehicles? Is Mercedes involved very much in that, or is that something...
We are. We have an electric B-Class that is in sale in a couple of markets around the world. We're just about to introduce some plug-in hybrids, which actually have an electric range, a pure electric range of about 30 kilometres. That's important because people need... Once you experience electric driving, you're a convert.
Yeah, absolutely. We've recently spent some time with the Tesla, and I think it's fair to say that both Pete and I are big fans.
Oh, yeah. An extraordinary car.
Absolutely, yeah.
But again, you've got... Whilst the Tesla has a very good range, you've still got a range anxiety issue.
Yes, you do.
Ask Pete about that.
Yes, you do. I became quite anxious driving the Tesla. Much and all as I loved it, I really realised I would have to modify my life to fit it in.
And, you know, this is where the infrastructure needs to catch up. Even, you know, in places like California and Germany, you know, that are well advanced on this path, the reality is you are limited by its range. We are so used to just driving somewhere knowing, oh, well, I can get fuel. With an electric car, that is a big inhibitor, and this is where plug-in hybrids are very important. You can have an electric range, albeit, you know, 30 kilometres or thereabouts, but you still have a combustion engine. The next step, obviously, you know, are things like fuel cells, but again, range. If it's a hydrogen fuel cell, well, you've got to be able to refuel it. Governments need to step up in terms of the infrastructure with the support of the car companies. And also, you still have the question of how is the electricity generated?
Yes, that's right. And so, what's that doing to the environment?
Yeah,
so plug-in hybrids are a very good stepping stone. As I said, anyone who's driven, you know, a modern electric car is a convert. But, again, it is the range. Even though research shows us that 90% or 95% of people, their average journey is less than 30 kilometres.
Yeah.
But there's always in the back of your mind, well, I can't just pull over to the side of the road and recharge it.
Mm. And look, I mean, I suppose when it comes to hybrids, there's probably no one more trusted, particularly with what you guys are demonstrating with the Formula One World Championship at the moment and the complete domination. Like, it's the only word to describe it. You're just wiping the floor with everyone out there on the racetracks.
And look, that thank you. And that technology has a direct transfer to our road cars. Lots of brands are involved in Formula One, but for us, that technology... The efficiency of the engines, the efficiency of the hybrid drivetrain directly translate to what we put into road cars. You know, it is important. It's great to be winning those races. We're very proud of it. But that technology is central to how we're going to be driving in the future.
Look, David, thanks. We've kept you for way too long. We really appreciate your time today on Behind the Wheel and hope that we might be able to talk you back into coming on the show maybe a little later in the year.
No problem. It'd be an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much, David. Good work.